It's the Burt Cohen Show. History is made generally by people taking action on their own, by people in the streets pressuring government to make things happen. Yes, elections are involved too, but it's got to come from the people on the streets. Any elected official can tell you that. It's got to work that way. And there is a presidential election coming up in 2016. This is probably the first time we'll be talking about that, but certainly not the last on the Burt Cohen Show. And it seems like, you know, there's a steamroller already got started in the name of Hillary Clinton. But depending on your point of view, it could be the Republicans' worst nightmare or the progressives' greatest dream, or maybe something in between. Bernie Sanders, independent U.S. Senator from Vermont, is contemplating a run for the presidency. The independent senator from Vermont commented in The Nation recently that he is, quote, prepared to run for president, unquote, in 2016. In a recent interview with Time magazine, the senator said he believes he'd make a better president than the former Secretary of State and likely 2016 contender. Well, he has written about it. Bill Fletcher writes for the Progressive magazine. Bill Fletcher Jr. is a racial justice, labor, and global justice activist and writer. He's also senior scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies, the immediate past president of Trans-Africa Forum, and he's been in the labor movement since graduating from college. He's the author of two books, They're Bankrupting Us, and 20 Other Myths About Unions, and co-author of Solidarity Divided, The Crisis in Organized Labor and a New Path Towards Social Justice. He is a syndicated columnist. And thanks very much for being with us, Bill Fletcher. You met Bernie Sanders when he was mayor of Burlington and was teaching at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. You and he had lunch, and you write that what struck you is that he was, quote, someone who was quite thoughtful and prepared to listen to views other than his own. Boy, is that ever a refreshing change. Now that immediately sounds different from most politicians. He's the subject of a lot of talk about him running for president in 2016. Aside from his positions on issues, could you talk about the ways in which he is different from most presidential wannabes? And again, thanks for being with us, Bill Fletcher.
Sure. Thank you for having me on the program. Well, Senator Sanders is different in so many ways. I met him in the 80s. He had just stepped down as mayor of Burlington and was contemplating at that point running for Congress. Bernie Sanders is different in that he is a avowed socialist. He has run as an independent, which is an issue that I take up in the piece that you referenced from The Progressive. He's run as an independent as mayor, as congressperson, and as senator, although he has met with the Democratic caucus in Congress and is part of that. He is someone that believes in social movement. I don't mean that he simply believes that they exist. We all know that they exist.
Right.
But he believes in the importance of social movements and is someone who is prepared to speak out and endorse those. He's prepared to speak out on what many pundits would describe as unpopular issues, or at least to take unpopular stands. But those stands usually warm the hearts of working people, of activists who feel that, you know, Sanders is a champion.
Now, okay, he's a champion. He's not afraid to take public positions. But, you know, unpopular positions on issues of real importance. What about, let's get right to it, what about the majority of people who say, oh, you got to hug the middle. You can't be out there on the edges, either the left or the right, which, I mean, immediately makes me think about, hey, look at the success the very, very far right has had in taking over the formerly grand old party, the Republican Party. I am amazed, as you must be, Bill, how far to the right they have gone and done well. What is it about Bernie Sanders, do you think, like perhaps the dynamic of people on the right who take positions that are really out of the mainstream, but maybe there's something about them that connects with people? What do you think about that possibility? I mean, he has been an avowed socialist. It's like, oh my goodness. I mean, even that word socialist just freaks people out. It's been said that, you know, when you say socialist, people just stop thinking. But what do you think about his potential strengths there and the, you know, conventional wisdom that, oh my goodness, you got to just hug the middle of the road?
Well, first of all, the opinion polls demonstrate that when it comes to the issue of socialism, there's actually far more support than many people had anticipated. In fact, it appears that close to a third of the population of the United States is open to alternatives to capitalism. So that's something that's very, very important to begin with. But in responding to your point, I actually want to use the historical example of the American Revolution. So contrary to the myths that we have grown up with, the American Revolution was a situation where only a third of the population favored the Continental Congress and Washington. Third favored the Tories, and a third was in the middle. Now, if the Continental Congress and the revolutionaries had taken the position that we can't do anything until we get that middle, we would be in a very different situation today.
Uh-huh.
The point was that you needed a committed core that was deeply, deeply bent on a particular course of action. And they had to win over the middle. And that's what was the reason for the success of the American Revolution. The middle was won over. It wasn't that the middle that they had to play to the middle. They won the middle over. The Tories were trying to win the middle over. It was the Continental Congress that won them. So I think that the idea that you start in the middle is problematic.
Mm-hmm.
You start with your point of view. You start with what you believe in. You start fighting. And then you work and build a broad tent within which you can include the middle. I think that that's basically been Bernie Sanders' approach.
Yeah, we are talking with columnist and activist Bill Fletcher about the good possibility of a Bernie Sanders run for president. And there have been people who say you have to run to the middle, but as you point out, that you don't lead from the middle. The middle leads nothing. The middle is led. It's led by the people on the street. And talk about, I want to, this theme will come up throughout our discussion. There is massive cynicism about politicians in general, especially those who want to be president. And there was a wonderful quote from somebody whom I had wished would run for president, former Senator Dale Bumpers of Arkansas. He said, "The qualities necessary to be a successful candidate for president are the very same qualities which should absolutely disqualify you from ever holding that office." What do you think Bumpers meant, and how does Bernie Sanders contrast with with what Dale Bumpers meant by his statement there.
I think that part of what's being raised is that in order to get elected president in the United States, you not only have to make compromises, which is true in all politics, but you have to raise an amazing amount of money, because we have a very undemocratic system that favors the wealthy. And when you have to raise money, poor people don't have money. So you have to find yourself tracking down and convincing a segment of the rich that you're not going to be unacceptable. And so that's problem number one. Problem number two is the problem of actually governing. You can have or take whatever position you want to take, but at the end of the day, you have to be able to build a governing coalition. And that is often something that is ignored. So it's not just what you say. It's not just what you believe. You have to be able to build a governing coalition. And that will also mean compromises, which might mean that that many of your supporters will be angry about some of your compromises.
True.
But I think that Bernie Sanders has been able to demonstrate through his years in office that he's quite capable of making compromises, but they're not unprincipled compromises.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's all part of the idea of building a broad tent, my original point.
Building a broad tent, and it does seem to me, I have been in elective office, as many people know. I was a state senator for 14 years, that I'm observing now, right now, in 2014, that there's a lot of anger out there. And the Tea Party has been very, very successfully tapping into that anger. The anger is very real. It's very strong. It's anger at its core, I think, that this government isn't working for me. This government is working for somebody else. And that, as John Nichols has been going around talking, he writes for The Nation as well, that it's a dollarocracy, that the money is freezing out democracy. It's wiping out democracy. And people are understandably angry about that. Now, the Tea Party has been talking to this issue. I think they're alleged solutions are quite wrong of just turning it over to the plutocrats directly. Now, Bernie Sanders has been talking to issues like economic inequality, like the destruction of the middle class, the people who used to be, I mean, in order to have a republic, Thomas Jefferson recognized you need to have a strong middle class. Well, it's been devastated recently. And as I said, the Tea Party has been talking to that. But Bernie Sanders has actually, I mean, people say he's so far to the left, he'll never connect with people. He's been going to the South, to the old Confederacy. I think, tell me what you think on this, Bill, that there's a tremendous potential for people on the left to actually really connect with people who are now drawn to the Tea Party. I don't see people like Hillary Clinton doing that. I'm glad you're chomping at the bit to jump in. Go ahead.
Well, I want to both agree with you and disagree with you on this whole issue of the Tea Party. There is a lot of anger that's out there. That anger is very complicated. There are a lot of white people that are very angry that there's a black president. And they're angry because their lives are unraveling for reasons that they don't quite understand. Their living standard has been declining for reasons that they don't quite understand. But in many cases, they're ready to pin the blame for this on, you fill in the blank, Jews, immigrants, black folks. And then you have this black president. And the rise of this black president, regardless of what you may think, of this, the the idea is that what he represents is a changing demographics of the United States. I don't mean what he represents in terms of his politics. I'm talking about by his very existence.
Right.
Now, so we have to understand that we've got to take that on. That's what we've got to actually address.
Well, I think not to interrupt too much, but I agree that, I mean, obviously a great deal of the Tea Party really is the old Confederacy. It's the same thing. White men, you know, have a right to rule, are entitled to rule. That, you know, that's something else. But the economic issues that I think, you know, may frustrate people and you know, so some of those issues. I mean, the racists, okay, you're not going to get. But what about the economic issues that may attract good, well-meaning people to the Tea Party?
No. See, that's my point, that these things have become conflated, that the declining living standard that white people and people of color have been facing can be interpreted in different ways. The Tea Party has chosen to interpret them in a very particular way. And so thus the all of the attacks on healthcare reform and the whole notion of that sign, government take your hands off of my Medicare.
You're right.
Right? Which was at first appeared to be ridiculous until you realize that what they were saying was that they did not want what they believed they were entitled to go towards people that they didn't believe were entitled to some to receive such benefits. What Bernie Sanders represents, as opposed to the Tea Party, was the it is the idea of inclusion and the idea of that this is not about picking the enemy from within the population. It's understanding the nature of the system that we're operating in.
Well, what,
does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. People, you know, here we are, we're well into the 21st century. People are really busy. Most people don't, frankly, have the time or inclination to really dig into to issues, to look at them. Oftentimes it seems celebrity is what wins, you know. I mean, let's face it, you know, some of that, it's high name recognition that the people vote for. People vote for, you know, just do they want to have a beer with this woman or man?
Right.
And looking into Bernie Sanders' actual solutions, people don't, you know, they're not, I mean, some people are going to do it. You're going to do it. I'm going to do it. But a lot of people don't do that. I wonder, I mean, there's just something about.
That's his job. You see, he's got to, for example, talk about Medicare for all. He's got to explain why we need that and why the Affordable Care Act is simply insufficient.
Right.
Right? He's got to talk about that, and he does. He's got to talk about the fact that Social Security is not in trouble.
Right.
He's the person, and he can do that. He's also going to have to do something that he doesn't do a lot about, which is to talk about foreign policy.
True.
Sanders has primarily focused on domestic issues, and he's been outstanding.
Yeah, very good.
And as I said, he's one of my heroes.
Yep.
But in order to rise to the level of the presidency, he's also going to have to talk about foreign policy. And I don't mean simply trade agreements. It's one thing to join the chorus, the growing chorus, the great growing chorus that's criticizing the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Right.
That's good.
Yeah.
But as we see right now around the world, whether you're looking at the Ukraine or Syria, the world is a complicated place. And the question that confronted Obama when he was elected, which we thought we had an answer to, was whether or not the substance of U.S. foreign policy was going to change, or whether it was just going to be window dressing. I believe, knowing Bernie Sanders' track record, knowing the kind of politics that he's advocating, that he's going to look for a different sort of relationship between the United States and the rest of the planet. And that's very, very important. We're going to need to hear that from him sooner rather than later.
Well, that's a good point. And I find it interesting you talk about foreign policy. It was March of 1961 that John Kennedy, for all his faults, initiated the Alliance for Progress. And what that was doing, and eventually it involved one of my heroes, George McGovern, to reach out to developing countries, specifically in Latin America, to improve literacy, make land use reform, increase industrial productivity, healthcare, education. That kind of foreign policy is a heck of a lot cheaper, much, much less expensive, and it's far more effective. I mean, if we just have a foreign policy, you know, people in developing world think of the U.S. as this vast military machine, you know, killing innocent people with drones. That's not really useful foreign policy. It doesn't increase our national security particularly. So I agree, Bernie Sanders. I look forward to him talking about it. I believe he can. If you just tuned into the Burt Cohen Show, our guest today is Bill Fletcher, columnist for The Progressive, senior scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies, from where I get a lot of guests on this show. Great place. We're talking about the potential, I would think likely, presidential candidacy of Bernie Sanders. He is motivated because, and correct me if I'm wrong, because nobody's talking about the economic injustices and talking about real solutions. And I, in preparing for the show and putting out some publicity for it, I went to Facebook, and there's a guy on there who writes really well, Kenny Williams. He said, "I wish Democratic leaders would embrace liberalism the way Republicans embrace conservatism." To me, I don't think it's conservatism. I think it's far right. It's not conserving anything. But anyway, back to Ken Williams. Republicans just recently spent a few days bashing President Obama at the Conservative Political Action Conference, planning to take over the country. Democrats seem afraid of their own shadows. I'm sick and tired of chicken something Democratic leaders being more concerned about saving their own behinds than fighting back for liberal principles. If they went on the offensive, the majority of Americans would support them. Your reaction to that, Bill?
Well, what's been happening since the 1970s, we began to see it particularly under Jimmy Carter, was a retreat by the Democrats.
Yes.
In the face of what was at first called the white backlash. The white backlash to the civil rights movement.
Nixon-Carter strategy.
The other social movements that were taking place at that time. That backing down then became intertwined with the response to Reaganism. And there was this level of fear, I believe, within the Democratic Party that to really take on Reaganism meant that you needed to tap into a very different social base, that you really needed to upset the system. And they weren't ready to do that.
Yeah.
Because to do that, I believe in their minds, meant that they themselves might have been in jeopardy. And so they backed away. They kept caving in.
Yes.
They kept making various kinds of compromises as the system was moving further and further to the right. So it became analogous to the story I love to tell about the man who jumped off the Empire State Building. And as he was falling past the 40th floor, he was overheard saying, "So far, so good." And that's essentially what we've been witnessing. I think and have thought, when you look at people that have been willing to fight, whether you look at the Jesse Jackson campaigns in the 80s or any number of struggles that have taken place in the 90s or since, that people are drawn to fighters.
Yes,
they're not
absolutely
drawn to people that are ready to cave in. One of the biggest criticisms of Obama from his own base is that he's too quick to compromise.
Yes.
That he seems to think that he can present himself as above the fray by offering some sort of ridiculous compromise in the beginning,
right,
when it's clear that the other side wants to cut his legs off. people are looking for folks that will fight. They're not looking for fanatics.
Right.
But they are looking for people that will fight. And, again, I think that there are people like Bernie Sanders and Dennis Kucinich and any number of other people, Barbara Lee, who are outstanding fighters. But here you get into another challenge. One is polling, and the other is money.
Yeah.
So depending on how you poll, the question is whether you use the poll as a base or as a ceiling. And I would argue that too many Democrats use polls as a ceiling.
Ah, interesting.
You know, this is not acceptable in the public. Therefore, we're going to change our tune. As opposed to saying, this is where the public is right now.
Mm.
We're going to push them.
That's what works. There's that great old bumper sticker, and it's true. When the people lead, the leaders follow. No question about that.
That's right.
And it does work that way. And certainly Franklin Roosevelt knew this when he was speaking with the leader of the Pullman Railroad car workers, H. Philip Randolph, right. Maybe you know the quote better than I, because I can't.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember.
Make me do it.
I'm with you. I agree with
that's
you.
Right.
Now, make me do it. And
make
that's,
me do it.
That's the strength that
that's right.
people have here. And
that's right.
When you say, you know, as polling, let polling, people, they need to see a fighter. One another great quote is from Bob Borisage, campaign for America's Future, who said, and this is so true, passion attracts. Cautious positioning alienates.
That's right.
And
that's right.
When you think about cautious positioning alienating, gee, who does that make me think of?
Right. That's exactly right. Now, one other thing that we have to look at here, and this all leads up to this very important strategic question. If Sanders runs,
right,
should he run as an independent, or should he run within the Democratic primary system?
Absolutely. That's
and I have argued he should run within the Democratic primary system. That this is not a matter of principle. This is because there are other people on the left who have run within the Democratic system, Democratic Party system.
Mm-hmm.
It is about the realities of U.S. politics.
Yes.
It's about making sure that your message is heard. We need Bernie Sanders, for example, to be debating other Democratic Party candidates.
Yeah, I can't wait to see
if that. If he runs as an independent, a good deal of what will happen is that he will, first of all, be excluded from all of the primary discussions.
He'll be irrelevant.
He'll be irrelevant.
Absolutely.
Then after the conventions and the candidates are picked for the Democratic and Republican parties, maybe he would be invited to one of the debates.
No.
But even that's a toss-up.
No, it's
we need him to be right there in the middle of the debates. We need his voice right there when all of this is being discussed. We don't need to have a situation where people are ignoring him while they're primarily looking at Hillary Clinton or whoever else.
Absolutely.
We need him right there.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, to get his issues talked about, it's got to be within the Democratic Party. And yeah, both of us, Bill, you and I think, have some histories of recognizing that there are a lot of people on the left who there's something almost, you know, enticing about losing, that there's something good and purifying about being on a losing campaign. I got to tell you, having been in the state Senate and won some issues that really affect people's lives, it's much better to win. It really is.
Yes.
It, you know, I've tried losing. It's better to win. And the Democratic Party, what is the Democratic Party? It's up for grabs. Katrina Vandenhoevel of The Nation, you know, is I think, in our same corner, saying that what is the Democratic Party? It's there for the taking. The Republican Party has been there for the taking, and look what happened to it. People got involved at the street level and took over the Republican Party. Well, that can happen within the Democratic Party. We don't need to yield the Democratic Party to the blue dog corporate candidates, you know, more of the same, who are just, you know, whatever the corporations want, that's what they do. Okay, there are a lot of people like that. The Bill Clintons of the world were that way. There's a group now called No Labels, which is all about caving into the right-wing agenda to you know, not upset anybody and to appear to play nice. But as you said, look at Obama on the Affordable Care Act. He started out compromising. I have to tell you, when I was going door-to-door for a congressional candidate back in 2010, a terrible year, I was talking to a woman who said, I'm not going to vote for this particular candidate because of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. And I talked with this woman for a little while, and I thought she was representing an average voter, and the bottom line was she wanted Medicare for all.
Right.
You know, and to start out compromising, to not fight, I think is an absolute losing proposition. You got to fire people up. And you talk about the independence thing. And here in New Hampshire, where this show is coming from, we unfortunately made the huge difference, all the difference, in fact, all the difference in the year 2000 with the independent run of Ralph Nader. In 2000, I would argue that Ralph Nader directly gave us the war in Iraq. I would say, well, the fact is, had just half of the Nader vote in Florida, just half, gone to Al Gore, Florida would not have mattered at all. Gore would have had the electoral votes to be president. So because of Nader, Bush became president and hundreds of thousands of people died and lost limbs. So I think we're in agreement on that. There's the purist aspect, you know, people on the left who don't
absolutely
don't dirty your hands by being with the Democratic Party. What do you say to those people?
I say to people something along the lines of what you just raised. I say that the Democratic Party is a battlefield.
Yes.
It's actually not a party.
True.
It's a battlefield, and that it calls itself a party. But when you look at what political parties are, it really isn't that. It's a battlefield. It's a bloc. And that within that, or on that battlefield, different views are going to contend. Now, this doesn't mean that the Democratic Party is somehow a neutral or empty base. It is, as George McGovern found in 1972, there were forces within the Democratic Party,
yes,
that were very strong, that were more intent on holding on to control than letting him win. So we should be very clear about that. But at the same time, a lot of the base for progressive politics will vote Democratic. So we need to be there. And someone like Sanders, his message will resonate among a very significant segment of the Democratic Party. Now, see, the other part of this is really relates to what you said. I'm not interested in losing.
No.
I'm not, you know, I'm sort of out of the George Patton school. You know, I don't give a darn about, you know, someone saying, you know, I fought a good battle and I lost. I want to win.
Right.
I'm interested in winning. And that's the bottom line. And if you're not interested in winning, the reality is that you're not perceived as being particularly serious.
Right. And the stakes are so high. I mean, the Republican form of government with a small r has been under serious assault. And we have a few exceedingly wealthy people running this show. I mean, so many members of
plutocracy. I mean, that's what we have.
Plutocracy, absolutely. Absolutely. And if the Republicans win, or for that matter, quite frankly, you know, if another corporate Democrat wins, you know, it's just going to get worse. I mean, the idea of government of, by, and for the people, oh, how quaint, how old-fashioned. Wasn't that swell for a while? But it's just not happening anymore. and we have to appeal to people and fire people up. Yeah, if you just tuned into the Burt Cohen Show, our guest today is Bill Fletcher, racial justice, labor, global justice activist and writer, who likes to win. I think the quote from Patton was something about the idea is not to die for your country, it's to make the other fool die for his country.
That was a different quote.
Oh, was it?
That one, yes.
Well, it's...
Yes, it's the same basic message.
Right. Now, what do you think about connecting with people? I mean, I hear people say, oh, my God, he's not going to win. He's a candidate of the left. You can't do that. We've talked about this before, I know, Bill, but this is what I hear all the time. He's so unrealistic. You have,
right.
A quote from... and I have to use another quote here from Will Rogers, who said, I'm not a member of any organized party. I'm a Democrat.
Right.
Always
right.
been the same. Bernie Sanders says, one of the goals that I would have politically as a candidate for president of the United States is to reach out to the working class element of the Tea Party and explain to them exactly who is funding their organization. Explain to them that on virtually every issue, the Koch brothers and other funders of the Tea Party are way out of step with what ordinary people want and need. Is Hillary Clinton going to say that to working people?
I don't think that she will. She's cut from a different cloth, with all due respect. See, I think when people say Sanders can't win,
right.
The part of the response I offer is that it depends on what kind of movement Sanders builds and Sanders fuses with. See, I think that this is not, we've got to understand, this is not just about Bernie Sanders the
right.
person.
Right.
It's about whether or not Sanders taps into other social movements, other leaders with a small L around the country, and really engages them. The Bernie Sanders that I met with in the 80s, who was prepared to sit down with me over lunch and listen to what I had to say, whether he agreed or disagreed, that's the Bernie Sanders that we're going to need. The one that will be able to sit down with representatives of other various political and social movements and hear their concerns, but also, not just that, but to offer them a place within that tent. I keep coming back to the issue of that tent.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be space so that people can look at this movement and see themselves in it.
Ah.
Otherwise, they may at best say, well, you know, Bernie Sanders is a really great guy, but no, that's not quite me. They've got to see that within that tent are people that look just like them, people that say the right kind of thing. And when Sanders says reaching out to the working class element of the Tea Party, I think that that's exactly what he needs to do. But I think at the same time, he needs to be brutally honest with himself and understand that there are many people within the Tea Party movement who are angry that this is no longer the era of the Donna Reed Show.
That's true. With all its racism, that was, I mean, the Donna Reed Show didn't have it, but it was all, I mean, black people were invisible back then. Wasn't that swell the way it should be? You know, and I think it's interesting to me, and I think you're absolutely spot on that having other people feel comfortable there. Right now, I think you probably agree, they're not there yet. You know, people who kind of like, oh, a woman for president, never mind what her real positions on the issues are or anything, you know,
right.
they feel comfortable with that. She's certainly pro-choice, no question about that, and you can't take that away from her. But she's been a big hawk in terms of military adventures. I mean, that's just a fact. So people... they need to feel comfortable being with other people who are there. It's like, you know, is somebody going to want to go to a fundraiser for Bernie Sanders? Will they feel like, oh, this is a party that I'll feel comfortable going to? I think that's a very, very good point there. You know, right now the United States are united. The Confederacy is part of the United States right now. I've no doubt mainstream Democrats won't even bother with the South. I mean, it's been, there was George Wallace, and then Nixon tapped very successfully into that, white male entitlement with his Southern strategy. The mainstream Democrats aren't even going to touch that. They're just going to figure out, well, we don't need their electoral votes. Forget about it. Bernie Sanders has been going there, speaking to people in the old Confederacies.
That's right.
Are there ways in which you think Bernie Sanders may actually connect with the Southern voter, make them feel comfortable being with him?
Oh, I have no doubt about it. I think that part of what he, I think, understands is that you can't give up on the South, that within the South there are these really amazing demographics. I'll give an example. The 2012 election, South Carolina, 40% for Obama. And that was with no investment by the Obama campaign. 40%.
Wow, that's
now,
interesting.
If you get 40% in South Carolina and nothing, no resources are put in, think about the possibilities. Right? Or think about, let's look at Texas. The Republicans right now are in an absolute panic. Because what they can see is that Texas is shifting. And that within the next 5 to 10 years, it is very, very possible, if not likely, that Texas may shift blue.
Yes.
Right? So you have to be looking at the South as a place that is in transition. This is not the South of 1965. This is a very complicated geopolitical region. And I think it's incredibly exciting, to be honest.
Yeah.
When I look at that, I look at the victory of the late Chokwe Lumumba in Jackson, Mississippi, for mayor. There are some amazing possibilities for us, folks. And I think that this is one of the areas or arenas that that organized labor made tremendous mistakes. By failing to put sufficient resources into organizing in the South. Sanders understands that.
I hope he does. And looking at the demographics of what made the difference for Obama in 2012, young people, number of young people is almost exact who voted. Of course, more should have, but the number of young people who voted is pretty much exactly the margin by which Obama beat Romney in 2012. Mm-hmm. And so that, I don't know about young people getting fired up, as Obama used to say, for the current front runner. Rand Paul is a libertarian, kind of right-wing guy. He's making a direct appeal to young people on issues like NSA spying and ending the war on marijuana.
Right.
This is crucial area. Hillary Clinton isn't going to touch NSA. She's not going to touch NSA spying or marijuana. What does Bernie Sanders say to this particular base? Does he have the chutzpah to speak to them?
Oh, there's no question about it. No question about it at all. But I don't think that. See, it goes back to this issue of the tent. I think that Sanders is not only going to need to speak to that constituency, he's going to need to have representatives of that constituency who are part of his kitchen cabinet, part of his campaign, people that are speaking out. He's going to need that. This is not just about people listening to Bernie. Rand Paul is very dangerous.
Yes.
Right-wing libertarianism is something that a lot of people become very confused on.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw this with Rand Paul's father, Ron Paul,
right.
that there's certain things that they will say, as you mentioned, NSA spying, the war, where they will seem to take the right stand. You push them a little bit, you scrape a little bit, and you find that their politics are very different than very anti-social programs, very anti-union, and frequently misogynist. in their politics.
Oh, yeah.
And
racism.
People have to dig deeper.
Yeah. Now, reaching those young people, I mean, again, you can agree, a lot of people can agree on the issue, but actually, like, if it's rainy weather on election day, a lot of people say, my vote doesn't count. You got to motivate people to actually get up out of their comfy chairs and go and vote. I wonder if, do you think Bernie Sanders can have that appeal to the base of young people?
It's not just about him personally. It's about the kind of organization that gets built.
Yeah.
See, on election day, you could have a very charismatic figure running,
mm-hmm.
who people may love, but it may not be enough to get them out of their homes. You need to have a level of organization that will make sure that people get out and vote. It's not just a candidate. It really is the level of organization, ward and precinct, as you know.
Oh yeah.
Right? And that is going to be critical on election day.
And Obama had that in 2012. I got to say,
he absolutely did.
Tremendous organization. So
tremendous organization. And on top of that, there was an issue that inflamed a key part of his constituency: the voter suppression activities by the Republicans.
Oh, true.
Absolutely infuriated African Americans.
Yeah.
And people were willing to stand on voting lines for hours, literally.
Yes.
Because they felt, we felt, nobody's taking that vote away from us. And whether people agreed with Obama on any number of things or disagreed with him,
yeah.
people stood in line to make it very clear to the Republican Party, no way.
Well,
and that is the kind of sentiment that Sanders is going to need to touch. So it's both him, what he has to say, two, reaching out, building a big tent, three, building the right kind of organization, and four, the issue of the right message that really motivates people to just say, damn it, we're fighting.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something about that old movie, I'm fed up and I'm not taking it anymore.
That's right. Network, right.
There is that strong sentiment out there. And if, it's like the lesser of two evils, that's not going to yank people out to vote. I certainly agree. The attempt to squash people's voting was a very, very motivating factor. Presumably the Republicans aren't that dumb and aren't going to do that again. Although you never know.
Oh, they're going to try to. No, they are.
Really?
They continue to do it. They absolutely, see, the thing that we have to understand about them is that they are relentless.
True.
So they got blunted in 2012. They have not given up. They will keep doing this.
On the voter suppression?
That's right. Absolutely.
Jeez, that's dumb. Well, good. What about the environment? Does that motivate people? I mean, I've been interested in the issue of reproductive rights for a long time, and I've been amazed at how young women of childbearing age, in particular, don't get motivated. It doesn't lift them up and get them out to vote. They just take it for granted. It frustrates the heck out of me. I don't know.
That's right.
But what about environmental issues? Obama is...
That's complicated.
It's
complicated because what happens with the environment, and I'm hoping that Bernie Sanders becomes the real green voice that
mm-hmm.
we need.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what's critical, I've concluded, is that it's not about scaring people about what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's about presenting solutions that people say, yeah, that makes sense. And part of what we have to do, and part of what I think large portions of the environmental movement have dropped the ball on, is that they've scared people. They've scared people so silly that people don't want to think. It's easier to be in denial. Because when they look at the situation, they watch movies like The Day After Tomorrow, they conclude there's nothing I can do.
They give up.
Right? So, in order to address that, we have to demonstrate that there are, in fact, policies that will necessitate restructuring our economy, to be honest, that can be implemented and, in fact, must be implemented, and that that Senator Sanders represents those.
Yeah, being positive, seeing opportunities instead of scaring people. I think you've really tapped onto something very important, Bill Fletcher, that, if you can talk about the jobs that can be created with a new environmental
policy.
That's
right.
It's just not much money, really. Create
right.
a lot of new jobs and have a bright future. And one of the things I've learned through the years is that, if you're looking like you're full of hope, if you're a candidate who has hope, who has some sort of a vision, that connects with people. If you look like you're having fun, too, that helps. And I got to come back to just, in case some people haven't been with us through the whole discussion. What do you say to those people who say, look, this is a hugely important election, 2016. We cannot risk alienating anybody. Sanders is just way too liberal for America to elect. What do you say to those people?
Say that we need to begin with the truth. We need to begin with what is needed in this country. And then we need to win over the skeptics. That if we begin in the middle, we will move further and further to the right. And that is what we've been seeing since the 1970s. Every time you cut to the middle, you end up moving to the right. That we've got to stand for something. The people that are for justice need to stand for that, whether it's environmental justice, economic justice, or whatever. We need to stand for that. We need to influence the people in the middle. The people that are in the middle are in the middle for a variety of reasons, sometimes because of confusion,
right?
Sometimes because of ambivalence, any number of things. But the middle is not where you want to be, as has been said frequently. There's nothing in the middle of the road except yellow lines and dead armadillos.
Jim Hightower.
And Hightower's famous statement. That's what we've got to keep in mind.
Yep.
We've got to stake out turf. And staking out turf does not mean being sectarian. It means beginning with what you believe.
Yep.
Recognizing, of course, that there will be compromises. But you begin with what you believe in. You don't begin with some attempt to get, towards milquetoast.
That's no way to win. And I got to tell you, from my own campaigns, I won. And a lot of times, in fact, every election, people would come up to me and say, Bert, you're the only Democrat I voted for. And I say, why? And consistently they say, well, I don't always agree with you on everything, but at least you stand up for what you believe in. And I believe you're going to fight for me.
That's right.
The way to win. I don't know why
exactly.
More Democrats don't do that. Well, the kid, he's opened the door. He says he's, quote, prepared to run for president, Senator Bernie Sanders. It sure looks like Hillary has, is going to have tons of money and all the star power on there. But he's looking at it. And there are, I think if you go to friendsofbernie.org, I believe that's a site there. This has been fascinating talking with you, Bill Fletcher. You know your stuff. What's a good way that people can follow your work on the Internet?
Well, thank you. I have a website, which is BillFletcherJr.com, and I'm also on Facebook as Bill Fletcher Jr. So please look me up.
Well, thank you so much, and I bet we'll talk to you again as the election approaches. Thanks so much.
I look forward to it. Thanks so much.
And thank you. And this is an old song, but don't stop thinking about tomorrow. There is hope for the future.